Thanks so much, Mike. It's great to have Bell back, and yeah, to see that team expanding, like Donna mentioned. It's really lovely to see all the different ways that we're able to worship in music and word and so many things we do. And I know it's been a little bit since Christmas Eve, right? So it's nice to have you guys back.
Great to see.
Maybe that was the week I was out, and I missed it. Where I thought I was watching on the thing. I guess maybe my mind is going. And so
you're too young for that.
People can relate, at least, right? So we're continuing in our series on companioning, and we've had the opportunity to lift up a number of the characteristics of what makes a companioning relationship special and the things that God especially brings to walking with us in our lives. And then God is sharing those same characteristics with us in God's love so that we can share it with each other and with those around us too. And we have an exciting, special thing to talk about today related to companioning. You'll notice that Peggy and also my wife Wendy will be sharing a little bit today. And part of that is going to be opportunities of how we can do companioning specifically. And that will include also, I'll be talking a little bit about something special we can do as companions for each other during the season of Lent, when many of us are used to a tradition of maybe we give up something for Lent or we take up something special for Lent as a part of focusing on our faith in a special way during that season and that tradition. So we'll be talking about how we can do that together as a church. So during this season, one of the things that has come to my mind that I relate with companioning, but is a little bit new, is that I've been very excited that later this year there's going to be a new Lord of the Rings television show coming out. And maybe you've seen that too. I really loved the books when I was a kid, and the movies came out when I was in film school in college, and so I nerded out about those movies in a number of ways. And the new show is going to be called Rings of Power, which is a prequel to the stories that we're most familiar with for some of us for Lord of the Rings. And they're based on an epic book by J.R.R. Tolkien and his son Christopher, which is called The Silmarillion. So it's different stories than Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit that we may have seen. But it's a book about the events thousands of years before those events that have already been made into movies. And if you can believe it, it's supposed to be even more epic than Lord of the Rings itself. Tolkien intentionally was trying to basically make an updated version of ancient mythology, like we might be used to with Greek or Roman or Norse pantheons. And so the characters are all especially mythic and epic and otherworldly. But one interesting thing that people noticed about the preview that came out, I think during the Super Bowl for the first time, for the new Rings of Power show, is that there are going to be hobbits in the new TV show. But the thing is, there were not hobbits in the Silmarillion. They're not mentioned in that at all. And so there are some fans that are already kind of starting to find aspects of that show maybe a little bit controversial or different. But I think that it's actually pretty smart. On the one hand, hobbits are the characters that people are most familiar with if they were into The Hobbit itself or The Lord of the Rings. And so it'll probably expand the audience that would be interested in the show. But it's also true that people love The Hobbits especially because they are so relatable in the midst of those grand epic stories. If you know the original books and movies, you know that there's a scene that really drives the relatableness and how we can connect to the story through a hobbit in a special way. There's this ordinary little hairy foot hobbit named Frodo, and he ends up, if you're not familiar with the story, with a ring that could ultimately bring about the destruction of the whole known world because it would give immense power to a dark lord who wants to control and destroy everyone named Sauron. Now, luckily, Frodo just happens to know a wizard named Gandalf, you know, as you're wont to do, to have a random wizard friend, and he figures out the danger, and so he makes it so that Frodo and a few of his hobbit friends can go to an elf city. And then there's going to be a great council where a lot of important people from all over their world come together and try to figure out how to fix the problem. So there's ancient, immortal, powerful elves, there's strong, persevering warrior dwarves, and there's important, growing influence on the continent men that all also come to this same council. This seems powerful and, though then relatable to any regular person reading or watching through the viewpoint of Frodo, because he naturally feels very overwhelmed and out of place. He's had the ring, he feels responsible for it, but he knows that it seems like a really small chance that a hobbit like him could have a lot to do with making the problem go away. So it's kind of an extreme example, but I would guess that there are ways that this can be a good metaphor for how any of us sometimes view our lives, and especially the life of faith, including how we think about being companions in all the sermons that we've lifted up recently. I hope that the ways that we've highlighted that God companions us and brings God's love to us and walks with us has been really encouraging, and we're thankful for that. But I know that when we think about being maybe companions for ourselves with people that we already know or that people that we may come across in our lives, even when we have God's help, we might be prone to wondering, can I really do this? Will all this talk about companioning just feel like too much to take on? Do I have the emotional capacity or the skill set or the personality to be a companion the way that we've talked about? Will thinking about all this sound really nice, but just end up feeling like it's piling task on type of task, or that I don't really have a place in it? That's for special people in some way. And I hope that I don't have to feel pressure or guilty if I'm trying to sort all this out for myself. And I get that. And the goal of the sermon series is definitely not to have that sense of pressure or guilt. The emphasis on companioning is that hopefully it can become more a part of our lives, but not in that way that piles on, in a way that we experience it as a gift and as an encouragement. And maybe that gift is not always easy, but hopefully we can see that it is always good, and that we would expect God to bring things out of each of us that we'd be amazed by and encouraged by. Lord of the Rings and our verses today understand how things can get in the way of being a part of a vision and mission that we're excited about, we think is amazing, but that we may have trouble knowing exactly what our place is. And so hopefully that can help us with companioning, because God does give us ways to find our own place in whatever it is that God is calling us to, even if we do feel small, even if we do feel less important, even if we do wonder if we can have any impact at all. At the meeting, Frodo, of course, does seem like the least powerful one there. All the other impressive people want to go on this quest. They're excited about it to destroy the ring. They're going to throw it into a volcano thousands of miles away so that the Dark Lord can lose his power. You hear all the impressive things that they've done before on other quests, and they say that how they'll offer these really powerful weapons in support of the effort. One of them's like, "You'll have my sword," and the other one pipes up wanting to be even more impressive, "You'll have my bow," and finally "my axe," and it goes along, people trying to show how impressive they are. And poor Frodo and his hobbit friends are probably feeling like, well, I could say, "You have my hairy toes, you have my affinity for making second breakfasts, you have my ability to fit into small places," right? It wouldn't feel as important. It's hard to follow God and go into an adventure when we feel like we don't have the right skills, or we're not important enough, or that we've done something wrong, and so that might mean God or anyone else wouldn't want us, or sometimes the task before us feels too big, or anything else that we can think of that I'm sure we've all felt. Our Bible verses, though, remind us how God not only empathizes with this, but overcomes it for us, no matter what the obstacle is. In 2 Corinthians, Paul lifts up how even the things that we struggle with the most, our failings, our suffering, our vulnerability, those are powerful foundations for how we can comfort and encourage each other when we share our experiences. And in Psalm 68, we see this really powerful picture of how God's amazing companioning changes the world, and then also brings along people who can have life-changing and world-impacting things by companioning with us, and especially those who are excluded and underestimated. I love the picture that's in one of the verses towards the end, where women that would have socially been overlooked and pushed to the side are called to declare the love of God with their words, with their lives, and in so doing that they can defeat even kings and all of their armies. Shows just how powerful even something that seems, those that might be called unimportant, those acts that might seem, how big of an impact can they make? The Psalms proclaim how powerful that can truly be. Similarly, Frodo and the hobbits really ultimately are the ones that, just in their faithfulness to go with the fellowship on the quest, are the ones that make the difference. They're faithful in just being a hobbit. They don't have any pretense. They don't have to do anything more than just what they know. I'm just going to do my best, whatever I can, even if I don't feel as powerful as these other things. I'm going to make sure I see it through all the way until it's finished. And in the story, what you find out is that all of these other impressive characters have things about them that need to be resolved ultimately. They have their own failings. They have their own insecurities. They have their own things that they are almost overcompensating for in trying to act all impressive. But when they're given the example of the faithful hobbit, doing what needs to be done, as long as it needs to be done, not worrying about pretending that they have to be impressive to do it, that unlocks something in each of the characters that need to overcome an obstacle, rise up to something, let go of an insecurity or an arrogance, and ultimately be at their best so that ultimately the quest that needs to be done can be accomplished and that those things don't actually get in the way. And that's what we can experience from companioning too. We can experience that same small act, being faithful, letting God cover those things that we might feel vulnerable about, and then we can see amazing big impacts. So like I said, we're going to be looking at examples of things that we can do together with that today. And one of the things that has been pretty neat for me as I've been talking through this sermon series and with some of you after the service or on days during the week, that many of you are sharing stories of what you already do or ideas that you'd like to try. And Peggy is one of those folks that came to me and gave a really, I think, compelling idea from her own experience, what it feels like for her to be a companion and have people companion with her, that I think would be really beautiful and inspirational for us. So I invite Peggy to tell us what that is, and then we'll see how that can be open to us and interweave with some other things that we could all maybe find our own little place in. Peggy, would you like to share about what your companioning example is?
Good morning, church family. Ooh, I'm on. We live in a time when communication in all its forms, voice, types, voice message, records and research, heard or physically seen on various devices, cell phones, landlines, computers, laptops, Bluetooth, and others, can be easily and rapidly accessed. These methods of communication are very helpful and many times necessary to communicate and or update information in business or personal matters. For millions of families, today's electronic devices keep family members and friends, they help us stay in touch. Communication of information and thoughts, whether with just one person or millions, can be as vague or as detailed as one wishes. These devices can be good tools to help us stay connected as family and community. One form of communication, though, not as nearly effortless and fast to use as an electronic device, is the handwritten letter. If properly preserved and stored, a handwritten letter is timeless in its personal appeal to our mind and emotions. Psalms in the New Testament of the Bible are filled with the preaching, teaching, personal reflections, and encouragements of our sisters and brothers who were inspired by Almighty God to write letters about God's goodness, what God had done for them, and what God can do for the hearers and doers of His Word right now. Among the important documents of our nation, preserved and viewed even today, such as the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, were handwritten. So we may learn from these accounts, from history, that a handwritten letter, though to write one, will probably require more thought and effort on one's part, can impart positive encouragement, companionship, and a sense of community for someone who may long to have these things in their life. Someone who needs to know that someone else cares about them. And isn't this the timeless, living message that God sends to each of us in His Word? Through letters from ages past, God is saying to us, at this moment, for always, I love you. I care about you. A personal handwritten letter can share God's love and God's hope with someone God loves. At this moment, for always. On a personal level, dear friends, I give thanks and praise to Almighty God for all the wonderful and generous gifts and talents He has given each of us. By working as a team to share God's gifts, we can help others and lift them up so that they too will know the faith, hope, and love of the Lord Jesus Christ. Please contact me if you would like to have a card for any occasion, and I or the team will make a card using appropriate passages of Scripture. And at this time, I'd like to recognize and thank members of the team that are already in place. The Creative Christian Crafters that have been a nice branch of our faith community make wonderful cards. They're always on display on stage in Fellowship Hall. Connie Black has made wonderful, beautiful cards. And I have a few of them here if you'd like to see me afterwards. And Phyllis, Grace, Annelle, JJ have all sent me not only hand-printed cards, but beautifully detailed, beautifully made. So you see, as Pastor Rob has pointed out, it isn't just one of us, it's all of us. Anyone can do the least little thing. I tell you that if you wrote a message of encouragement on a cocktail napkin, God would see it.
Yeah.
And He would use it to His glory and to the help and the hope that we have in the Lord Jesus Christ. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peggy. And I'm sure many of you, like me, have been blessed before with Peggy's beautiful handwritten messages for different occasions. And I know many other people in our congregation regularly send cards, letters, other crafts, and things like that. And those are great ways that we do show care for each other. Not only the words themselves and the meaning that they convey, but knowing that someone took time, someone was thinking of you that way, that there's something about seeing someone's handwriting that makes you feel closer connected to them than just seeing something typed up on a computer and things like that. So it's really beautiful. And so Peggy basically shared with me that for her, as she thinks about companioning, she has this vision to do even more of those types of letters, especially for people's birthdays, anniversaries, special occasions. And I thought, that's a wonderful thing that I know other people care about too, and so maybe we can find partners and encouragers, and maybe if you haven't done that before, but you've received some of those, that can be a small act that you could give a try to that would help a person feel like they have a companion, and you would know that in trying it out and getting started, you would have a wonderful companion like Peggy or other people that care about that too. Yeah, what else did you want to say?
I also like to add that your handwriting does not have to be beautiful. It just has to be legible.
All right.
It can be printing. You know, people are just so appreciative. When I make up a birthday card, I forgot to mention this. When I make up a birthday card for someone or an occasion like an anniversary, what I will do first of all is you tell me your birth date. And I'll look up in Psalms. Say you're 5 years old. I'll look at Psalm 5 and select a verse from that. Now, I need to tell you at this point that David wrote many of these psalms when he was really down. So, you're not going to get a birthday card from me that says, my enemies are hotly pursuing me. Happy birthday!
You never know. Sometimes that might be exactly what hits the spot. But and it's good to know that handwriting doesn't have to be beautiful, because that would have been disqualifying for me.
But
yeah, so if anyone is interested in joining with that as one expression of companioning, Peggy has said she'll talk to folks for a little bit after the service, and we can help coordinate that some. And then also, we can be reminded that while those are nice to give at any occasion, that there are sometimes people who are going through especially difficult seasons in their life for whom companioning is especially important. One of our scriptures today was a letter written from prison by Paul, but he also talks in many of his letters about how he appreciated receiving letters from the churches when he was in prison, and how that created connection when otherwise things were trying to array against the ability to have people walk alongside him. And so we know and have probably had come to mind before during this companioning series that there may be people who could especially use some form of companioning, and that might be where we most wonder, what can I do about that? That might feel overwhelming if there's someone going through something that I don't know very much about, or I have trouble relating to, or it seems like the only way to make a difference is to do some big giant project. But there are actually a number of ways we can do that. And so Peggy sharing with me about letters, and Wendy, it turns out, has something with her ministry that is related to letters too. We thought we could put them together. And so I invite Wendy to come and share a little bit about how we can put letter writing and companioning for people going through a difficult season into this idea as well for any folks who are interested. And you can be right here if you want, or you can be up at the lectern. Okay.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. Oh, now you really can hear me. Okay. Good morning.
Good
morning. So, I was excited to have the opportunity to share with you about a particular program. As many of you may know, I run a nonprofit organization that works with a lot of faith communities, and a lot of what we focus on is assisting people who are impacted by the justice system or coming out of a jail or prison back to the community. And that program is called ARCH, Accompanying Returning Citizens with Hope. And one of the initiatives that we have is actually a collaboration with a larger network of United Methodist Church, where they kind of created this, and it's been utilized in faith communities throughout the state. And it's a project called Hope Letters. And this is a program that was started by a woman up in Dayton named Amelia. She goes into the jail and does a lot of Bible studies with women. And then a gentleman named James, who is formerly incarcerated, and came home. And the two of them got together and created this program. And it's been sort of, the good part about it is that it's been kind of like standardized, to where people can replicate it in different faith communities if they'd like to take part. And it's approved through the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. So Hope Letters is really just a wonderful opportunity for people who are coming home. What we do is we work through, if a church wants to start a Hope Letter ministry, how they do it is that women will write to women and men will write to men, and they do this as a group. So it wouldn't mean that, like, if I wanted to be a part of it, I would be working with a group of women from our congregation, and we would be assigned a couple of women from the women's prison, and we communicate back and forth through letters. And usually it's once a month, and the group would get together, all together, have a fellowship, read the letters from the women, write letters back, and they assign women from when you're incarcerated, they say from the inside. So if you're inside the institution, you're working with a chaplain, and the chaplain helps to determine who would be an appropriate partner for a particular congregation. And these are usually people who are going to be coming home relatively soon, within a year, to the county where the ministry is located, so for us to Franklin County. And that there are women who don't receive much communication at all. So a lot of times with people who've been incarcerated, they may have their loved one pass away or move, or, you know, if they don't get visitation. There's a lot of reasons why people may not have anybody communicating with them. And so it's really critical for someone who's coming home. They're usually very nervous. They feel alone. They feel worried they're going to be judged. These are going to also be people who identify as Christian to be put into this program to communicate with the church. So usually they don't have a church home, and they're looking for that. And so this is one of the goals of Hope Letters, is to help bridge that gap between faith communities that want to show welcome and love and compassion, and with people who are isolated in these prisons and are coming home and are very nervous and overwhelmed and need some kind of hope. And I think that one thing that we have a church that is, they just highlighted it, we have a Catholic church in Grove City called St. Cecilia's, and their men's ministry does a lot of communication with the men there. And so there are concrete things that can also occur when the person comes out. There's any number of things that you can do, and it's not required upon the church to do, you know, beyond the letters and the relationship in the ministry. However, you know, when someone comes home, they may have another array of needs that they may find themselves having, clothing or food, or maybe you could send them like a welcome home care package, or, you know, get them some, you know, gift cards or something of that nature. And then because our ministry is active in this, accompanying returning citizens of Hope, or a bigger umbrella, we have staff that help people find jobs, that help people get connected to services. So one of the things that we're kind of interested in is if this is a ministry that this church wants to participate in, then there would also be these larger networks, you know, so that the church could focus on just being a place of relational support, and that we would be able to work in partnership. And I know from experience that, you know, there are folks that have been a part of Hope Letters that have, like, saved every single letter and read them when they get out even later to encourage themselves. It really is an amazing, it seems like such a small thing, and in many ways it is a small thing, but when you have nobody else communicating with you and no connection to the outside world, it's a very significant thing, and people are very, very moved and touched to be a part of this ministry. So I also know, you know, for the folks that are participating in it on the church side, just how grateful and humble people are, it really shifts the way you may think about others who are. You know, in these circumstances that often have just been dealt a very difficult life and have made some choices in their life that now they're having to deal with the ramifications for. So, I don't know, I just always feel very blessed and humbled whenever I get to hear and learn more about other people's stories. So this is one of those opportunities. So. I don't know what else you want me to say.
That's good.
Except that this is an opportunity, and that it's very, there's rules and there's boundaries and there's guidelines. It's not a free for all. It'll be assigned to people. There'll be a team. And we really would love to, really, there's an opportunity for anybody that wants to be a part of this. Again, if we have enough, I think we have a couple women who express some interest, so that would be able to work with a woman's prison, of which there's two in the state of Ohio. And then, but there's also opportunity for men. And so we have over 50,000 people incarcerated in prisons alone in the state of Ohio. And so it's really, there's a lot of people in need. So thank you so much.
Thank you. So as I said, I got the sense, as Peggy was sharing with me and Wendy was telling me how this program was coming together, that God might be doing something, because we do have a lot of people already within our congregation who bless people in this sort of way all the time. and that this could be a really good fit. I think especially because it allows us to do some expression, manageable expression of companioning. We know that as we do it, we're going to have our own companions. We're going to have organizations that specialize in casework and support like Wendy's. We have the chaplains that help set boundaries within the institution too. And so it seems like it could be a good framework. And if you're interested in that as well, if you have some experience with letter writing, if you'd want to do something together as a group that you knew was safe and offered comfort to people and that her organization could help us do anything else that you might feel like, you know, how could this be tricky afterwards? Or wouldn't they get out or anything? We know we have a partner that can help us sort that out. And all these two are two very concrete examples of how maybe we can't say you can have my sword, you can have my bow, you can have my axe, you can have my big deal thing that, you know, makes us feel powerful. But we can say, you can have my me. I want to be a companion, and I'll do that as best as I can. And it's okay if these things that were lifted up today are not exactly what you would be feeling called towards. It's supposed to be that people for whom that feels like the right fit, great, we're going to give you the opportunity. We also want to give opportunities and support if you feel like something else would be the right fit. So ultimately what that comes down to, though, is, like I said, as we've been focusing on companioning, I think that that's something that our church, that God has raised up amazing gifts and talents and heart for already. And I want us to find ways to do that for each other and for those around us that express that gift that God has given and that help our own church vitality by living our faith. And so, since we're going into the season of Lent, what I'm inviting us to do together is some small acts that can have a big impact as companions. I'm going to ask that folks would think about if they can, as a Lenten practice, the same way you might give up chocolate or Facebook or things that people do, or you might take on a Bible study, 1 hour per week, just aim for it. 1 hour per week of some expression of companioning. Talking with Wendy or Peggy and finding out about letter writing could be one way that you might be able to try to do that. But we're going to have other things that are already within our congregation or that we'll continue to tell you are ways that you can companion people. We've got things with Scouts, with Goodwill, with our garden partners, with people who are homebound, with kids and families and people in challenging situations. All those are just already here. We already know those folks and have those opportunities. It's just giving a chance to walk alongside people a little bit differently. So those are one things. But also I want you to think about, it may be that none of those things that feel like a separate thing or that might be starting up something new is the way that you would be called to be a companion. It might just be that you have an existing relationship that you realize, you know, I think God might be asking me to give a little bit more support to this person who's already in my life. And that's what I want to commit to do. And that would be just fine too. And it could be that you tell us about that and ask for ways that we can support and we could be companions to that person in your life as a church. Or it could be that you just do that on your own, and that's great also. But our hope, again, is that we're going to show thanks and appreciation for God's companionship and what that has meant for us and see how we can companion together again in small ways, not piling on, but trusting to see what God might draw out of us that could be really powerful if we're willing to do it. There are sign-up sheets in the narthex where you can sign your name, and then there's a column that you can check for any particular type of companioning that you might be interested in or that you think that you would do anyway. And that's not putting pressure on you. That's giving you the opportunity for me, for Robin, for other people in the congregation to follow up with you and say, that's so great that you're giving it a shot. We want to give you encouragement. We want to give you what you need to do what you would hope to do and know that you're not going it alone, that it's not piling on, that God and each of us together are companioning together to be companions where it's needed in our lives. I really do believe that this will be a season that we won't have to feel like we're getting beaten down or piled on or worn out. I believe that this will end up feeling like a season where we have been gifted something from God. We've been given more experiences of God's loving, transformative life in our own experiences that ultimately, by trying to do this to connect with God and to connect with others, we'll come out of it feeling encouraged and energized and like we have been more of ourselves and all the beautiful things that God has always done in this church in even more ways that we can see fruit for. And so I hope that you'll consider doing this, and I'll invite us now, as we consider this, ask God to put calls or encouragements on our heart. that we'll also do the act of offering ourselves that we do each week in praying for the offering, which is just giving of who we are and what we have for God to lead us what to do with. Becky?